It's the season finale extravaganza, and we're going to talk about everything from Walt Whitman to ninjas today. Friday Night History 66, Season 2, Episode 33, Ninja vs. Buchanan. Ages ago, I did an off-the-cuff history thread that drew a lot of attention and helped me make some of the connections via social media that I still enjoy today. I didn't know it at the time, but that's what grew into this podcast, and now here we are a good 3 years later at the end of Season 2. Thank you to my Patreon patrons especially for making my work and livelihood possible. But oh, where to begin? Key province, what today is Wakayama Prefecture. That's where we'll begin, circa 1716, when key domain lord Tokugawa Yoshimune succeeded the childless Tokugawa Ietsugu and became the 8th Tokugawa shogun. But Doc, I hear you say, I thought this was an episode about James Buchanan. And the answer is yes, it is, but let me build to the punchline, dammit, you'll see. So Yoshimune went to Edo and took office as shogun. He already had a record as a reformer in key domain, and took this reputation onward with him to Edo as shogun. And as part of his reforms, Yoshimune established the Oniwaban, or garden wardens. But we're not talking about gardeners, folks. No, we're talking about what we now call ninjas. Ninjas weren't the angry black pajama-wearing movie stereotype, but they were rather a range of specialists with a variety of skill sets, ranging from intelligence gathering to psychological warfare to asymmetrical warfare, and yes, sometimes, also assassination. And when Yoshimune moved to Edo Castle and assumed office as the 8th shogun, he brought along 205 key retainers who became direct shogunate vassals. Among them were 17 men who were his personal spies. After becoming Tokugawa shogunate retainers, these were what became the Oniwaban's founding members. Over the ensuing decades, the founding 17 families grew to a total of 26. And one of them, a branch of one of the original 17, was that of Muragaki Yosaburo, who we're going to call by his adult name of Muragaki Norimasa. This Norimasa was a hatamoto, a direct shogunal vassal, which meant that he was eligible for service in the shogunate bureaucracy in high office, as well as being a hereditary ninja. Meanwhile, 75 years after Yoshimune took office as shogun, James Buchanan was born in Cove Gap, Pennsylvania. The same year, the American brig Lady Washington was the first U.S. vessel to visit Japan and unsuccessfully try to trade. Let me say that again. James Buchanan was born the same year that the first U.S. ship visited Japan. Many ships followed between the Lady Washington in 1791 and Commodore Perry's flotilla finally forcing a treaty out of Japan in 1853. Many were whaling ships, some in distress, and there were enough shipwrecked Americans that in some parts of Japan, local officials had picked up a surprising amount of English, per the observations of Ronald McDonald, the subject of Friday Night History Episode 2. By 1851, no less than Herman Melville said in Moby Dick, quote, "If that double-bolted land, Japan, is ever to become hospitable, it is the whale ship alone to whom the credit will be due, for already she is on the threshold." Unquote. Japan is mentioned a total of 21 times in the book. So it was on Americans' minds, and Japan's as well. The shogunate and Japan's domains were actively observing these incursions, adapting their defenses, exploring new technologies, developing shipbuilding methods, and keeping up with the growth of European dominance over the Qing Empire right next door. We've been talking about this on the podcast for a while now. So when the Perry Armada arrived, it did not find a passive Japan. Japan was underprepared, but not unprepared. In the end, the U.S. still forced the Treaty of Kanagawa on it. Among other things, this broke the Japanese economy by insisting that everything be backed up by specie, gold, silver, and such, which drove commodity prices up and accelerated the shogunate's collapse. Anyway, point is, it was an unequal treaty, and Japan had to ratify it by sending a delegation to Washington. And so it came to pass that in the year Man'en 1, 1860, The Tokugawa shogunate sent a diplomatic and military delegation east across the Pacific. The top trio in the delegation were Shinmi Masaoki, Muragaki Norimasa, and Oguri Tadamasa. The plan was for two ships, the USS Powhatan and the shogunate navy flagship Kanrinmaru, to make the crossing together. The shogunate navy had been around for a couple decades at that point, but it hadn't ever gone that far from home. So this was a first in terms of projecting power, and it would require more experienced assistance. Luckily, in Yokohama at the time was John Mercer Brooke and his crew, formerly of the USS Fenimore Cooper, a survey ship which had foundered off the Japanese coast. While the Kanrinmaru had a Japanese crew, the crossing was so difficult that the more experienced American sailors oversaw operations, while their Japanese colleagues were overwhelmed, seasick, or both. Meanwhile, in command of the Powhatan was Josiah Tatnall, a noted naval officer of the time. The ships arrived in San Francisco Bay safely, and while the Kanrinmaru did a port visit there and put in for repairs at Mare Island Naval Shipyard, the Powhatan took the delegation to Panama. There wasn't a canal yet, so they had to cross the isthmus by rail and take another ship north to Washington. Three prominent naval officers were assigned to accompany the delegation: Sidney Smith Lee, David Dixon Porter, and Samuel Francis DuPont. If you know your Civil War era naval history, those names might be familiar, but wait for it, we're not there yet. So here's the thing to remember about James Buchanan. Apart from his being a feckless centrist who enabled the worsening of the crisis that culminated in secession, he had a reputation for being underdressed. He was criticized for it while he was U.S. ambassador to Great Britain, a tenure that was also marked by scandal brought on by his secretary, one Dan Sickles. Now, mind you, the U.S. didn't really have the best relationship with the U.K. at the time in general, and of course the Brits would get hung up on not being fancily enough dressed, but just bear that underdressedness in mind. The view in the shogunate was that the president was the shogun of America. He was owed the same kind of carefully choreographed ceremony and respect, the term in Japanese is rei, the Confucian concept called li in Chinese, as the Tokugawa shogun would be. But Muragaki and Shinmi's questions to DuPont on this issue didn't make sense to the American, and as Masao Miyoshi observes in his book on the mission, seemed pressing and fussy. And when the delegation arrived at the White House and was received with honors due any foreign diplomatic mission, they were stunned to find that Buchanan was underdressed and underwhelming. Buchanan actually had to be pointed out because he wasn't immediately obvious as the president. What's more, he was amicable, which would be welcome to you and me today, but that offended Muragaki and the others, for whom a head of state was not someone to be befriended, but someone to be shown deference. Why did I go to the trouble of wearing formal attire? What a waste of time and effort, Muragaki wrote of the meeting. After Washington, the entourage went north by way of Philadelphia, where they played what was apparently the first game of Go in the U.S., to New York. They were foreign dignitaries, so they were in New York, so hey, a parade up Broadway. And who should be standing in the crowd but Walt Whitman? Moved by the sight of the city turning out, he wrote the poem Broadway Pageant. The poem is very long and has some now problematic language, so I'm just gonna quote the opening lines. Quote, "Over the western sea, hither from Niphon come, courteous the swart-cheeked two-sworded envoys, leaning back in their open barouches, bare-headed impassive, ride today through Manhattan." Unquote. Yes, Walt Whitman, also so a ninja. Also in the parade, present to render honors, was the local militia that would become the 69th Infantry. Nice. Yes, that 69th Infantry, under the command of Colonel Mick Corcoran. From New York, the Japanese delegation boarded the USS Niagara and took the long, 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 long way home. Down around the Cape of Good Hope, and up through the Indian Ocean, back northeast to Japan. The U.S. fell ass-first into civil war the year after, and the 1860s as a whole were an era of slowly intensifying internecine conflict culminating in civil war for Japan. The shogunate did its best to pursue modernization at breakneck pace, but in the end, its efforts were insufficient. Oguri, who was one of the top trio on the 1860 mission, tried to save the Tokugawa order by remaking the system into something historians call Tycoon Monarchy. Tycoon Monarchy. I said tycoon here, not shogun, because it's the shogun's civil rather than military title. And if Oguri had succeeded, the Tokugawa family would have remained in power as a monarch, but the system of a shogunate would no longer be operative. But there's one last twist to our tale. There was a man from Sendai who came along for this ride. Tamamushi Sadayu was his name. The story has it that he was a punmeister and could really hold his liquor, and by hereditary family duty, he was a falconer. He had become a scholar and an educator. Anyway, so he came home to Sendai and went back to teaching at Yokendo, the main school for the retainers of Sendai domain. 8 years later, Tamamushi became one of the leading voices in the faction that pushed Date Yoshikuni, Lord of Sendai, to rally the northern clans into an alliance to resist the imperial army and make a go at building an alternative system for Japan after the shogunate's collapse. What I remember is that the model he was advocating for was a federal system, which seems to have been inspired by the US, even if it wasn't democratic per se. He also led the effort to reach out to the US for military aid and political recognition. But in the end, the House of Date lost, Tamamushi was executed, and strangely, Buchanan died the month that short-lived Northern Alliance in Japan was founded. And what of Muragaki? The ninja who met James Buchanan? Well, he died of old age in the early days of modern Japan. Quietly, even. Not bad for a ninja. But before we close, I would be remiss if I didn't offer a few postscripts for the American characters in our tale. John Mercer Brooke, talented hydrographer and cartographer who had acting command of the Shogunate Navy flagship Kanbin Maru, resigned his U.S. Navy commission to support the revolt of a slaveholding secessionist state. He joined the Confederate Navy. He was instrumental in the invention of the Brooke gun. In 1862, he helped remake the USS Merrimack into the CSS Virginia, whose assault on the Union blockade was ended by the USS Monitor. The Virginia was the flagship of Confederate Flag Officer Josiah Tatnall, who likewise resigned his U.S. Navy commission in 1861. Also a traitor to his oath and country was Sidney Smith Lee, brother of Robert E. Lee. David Dixon Porter and Samuel Francis DuPont were two of the U.S. Navy's first crop of admirals, together with Porter's foster brother, David Glasgow Farragut. Porter was in command of the Mississippi River Squadron, which helped Ulysses Grant take Vicksburg, and went on to be in the room during the meeting aboard the steamer River Queen when Grant, Lincoln, Sherman, and Porter had the meeting that decided policy for what appeared to be the imminent end of the war. DuPont's service, most notably in the Atlantic blockade, and overseeing some of the amphibious operations that took islands off the southern coast, was commemorated by the naming of Washington, D.C.'s DuPont Circle. In short, history is a lot more interconnected than you might imagine. I'm Nairi, and this has been Friday Night History, Season 2. Now, questions? Friday Night History is a historical romp with me, your favorite history dyke, Dr. Nairi A. Bakalian. Our theme is O Hayashi from Paratune, licensed under CC 4.0. This podcast is brought to you by my Patreon patrons, so thank you to Sorcha, Catherine, Emily, Eric, Jan, Bob, Ryan, Sean, Ennis, Faith, JD, Kaz, Rita, Dinsdale, ALC, AO65, Amy, Daphne, Dr. Yakumo, Lemur, Gnarl, Irene, Jesse, Catherine, Katie, Laura, Maeve, Mark, Nora, Sinan, Aura, Bewick, Charlene, Charles, Danny, Deborah, Emily D, Emily R, Julie, Gabe, Jacob, Jax, Jocelyn, Kathy, Kim, Mary, Phoebe, Phoebe Z, Relia, Rueri, Lisa, Susan, Tora, Zandra, Allison, Amy, Andrick, Bruce, Charlotte, Colin, Flitterkit, Jack, Kelly, Lane, Natalie, Fulong, Planes, Sam, Samantha, Vera, Ines, and Zoe. I couldn't have done it without you. Thank you so much, and remember, who you are and what lights your fire is worth fighting for. North Star forever. I'll see you around.